Welcome, everyone, to this evening's forum. My name is Mark Schwain, and I'm helping to coordinate the summer teaching staff. And tonight's forum is entitled, the broad title, Worship and Community. Let me just say a few words about how forums at Holden work and what we think they're about. Forums are a time, obviously, when the villagers gather to consider together and converse about some kind of issue or question. The objective is never to resolve the question or to take a vote and see which side wins. In fact, it's not really primarily construed to be a debate so much as it is to be a kind of deliberation that's often many-sided. And we try to take these forum topics from the community itself, and indeed tonight's scenario, which I'll say more about in a moment, was actually taken almost directly from a villager's story earlier this summer. And then what inspired us to do a kind of variation of that story as tonight's case was that in Barbara Rossing's Bible study early this week, when she invited people to talk about at what point they experienced diversity in their own lives. Many people mentioned the context of worship in their local parishes. So it was, and offered up examples and mini stories about that. So what I'm going to do is to read this case. We have the characters, who we will mention here with, I should say quickly, fictional names, present with us this evening, and each of them will speak briefly. And they also want me to emphasize the fact that they are really participating in a dramatization here. The views that they put forward and the positions they take may or may not be positions that they actually hold in real life. And they're asked to stay and roll for a while, but after a point, they can either choose to stay and roll or kind of merge into the rest of you and have a conversation. So let me read you the case, then we'll introduce one by one the principals. They'll say a few words, and then everybody's invited in to talk with them and with one another about this broad subject focused on this particular case. So here we go. St. Johann Sebastian Lutheran Church is falling apart. Several families are leaving the church over the issue of worship. These families want more and more contemporary hymns, music, and liturgical settings. They find the steady diet of the LBW boring and often very difficult for members to sing. They think that much of the classical music the choir sings sounds dreary. Indeed, it seems like every church service is a funeral service. After church each Sunday, these families feel like asking, who died? Pastor Louise Singer, who sits here to my immediate right, has an answer to this question. Jesus died, she says, and we gather here to worship Christ every Sunday in a liturgical tradition that we have been working for centuries to develop, one that binds us to the community of Christians living and dead. My job is to initiate all members into the LBW so they can sing wherever they go within the Lutheran Church. Sure, our music is difficult at first, but we need to worship God with the best that is in us, and anything worth doing well is difficult at first. Too many contemporary songs of praise are trivial, both as musical expression and as theology. The chair of the worship committee, Chris Deal, who sits straight across from me here, wants to please everyone. He proposes that each Sunday there should be an 8:30 a.m. traditional service and a 10:45 contemporary service. But the director of church music, Dennis Baton, over there, is opposed to the worship committee. He's worried about the sexist language in many contemporary hymns. And though he loves all kinds of music, he says, quote, worship should unite and deepen community, not divided into early and late, young and old, traditional and contemporary. I won't have worship style be another item on the American consumerist menus. I'm for blending different styles of worship in all of the services. Can we save St. Johann Sebastian? We'll begin this evening's forum by hearing from one of their most troubled members who's with us this evening, Mrs. Jennifer Doleful. So we'll begin hearing from Jennifer.
Well, I'm really torn. I have such a long depth of friendships and networks within this congregation that this is something I've always felt would be important to happen for my children, but I feel like I'm losing them. During church service, I'm just finding that whenever we pick up the hymnal or have a song from the hymnal, they're not able to maintain their attention. Now, my kids are older, too, so don't just think it's the little ones. Probably it was a little easier to keep them quiet with crackers. But with the older ones, I'm finding that it just doesn't speak. In fact, I began to realize, after helping one of my kids with some poetry analysis, I started to look at the hymns that we were singing. Oh, old favorite of mine, Almighty Fortress. You know, Luther wrote it. You know, and the tune and the text he wrote, and there was sometime in the late 1400s to early 1500s. Christ the Lord is risen today. Text was written in 1100, tune 1781. Holy, 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 1783, 1823. Well, I'm thinking, well, no wonder my kids don't quite get this. And then I'm thinking about the images, you know, fortress, sword, shield, victory, oppressors, evil foe, woe. Then the other one, hasten, replete, paschal, stead, undefiled, reconciled, contending, whole. I'm starting to also feel disconnected during worship, because as I am singing the songs that have had that long tradition for me, and yet when I learn the new contemporary ones, gee, I pick those up pretty fast, they pick them up fast. After service, I'm still hearing the melodies and the refrains in my mind. The messages seem clearer, they're simpler. It just seems somehow joy is more there, and when we have more contemporary songs within the service, my kids are really responding. They'll say, hey, that was a, you know, church felt good, it felt worshipful for them, it felt that celebration. So, and I even think I hear a difference with the volume of voices. You know, as people voted with their voices, if we had a little sound meter, I think we'd find that the contemporary songs were singing more loudly, more connected with it, and when we get to some of those old traditional ones, we're really struggling. So I'm concerned. I'm afraid we're losing our kids. I'm afraid we're going to lose families. I'm afraid we're going to die in church. And that isn't what I want. I think that looking at the years and the dates, we really need to realize that times change, language changes, and images change. And I think we're really at a crossroads. We need to be thinking about that.
Thank you so much, Jennifer, for being so eloquent and straightforward. It sounds to me, Pastor Singer, as though she's really troubled not just by some tunes, but a set of images, maybe even a theology behind them, and a mood and everything else. How do you respond to these concerns?
Well, I mean, pastorally, of course, I'm concerned about this, but there are some principles, I think, that we need to keep in mind. I mean, the point of worship, after all, is not for people to feel good or to entertain people, but it really is to worship God and to do it the way that Christians have for nearly 20 centuries. And really, our Lutheran worship is built on that rock-solid foundation that goes all the way back to the early church. And you know, I still can remember what it felt like to me when I was a student at Valparaiso University in the 60s, and I first learned what the liturgy meant, and you know, that what the different parts meant, and how some of those things that we sing are, I mean, go all the way back to Jesus' time or even before. And I I mean, I still get goosebumps when I think about how good that felt to me to be connected with those Christians and people of God all the way back. And really, one of the reasons I went to seminary was to help other people have that same kind of experience and to learn that tradition and to learn to appreciate it. So I think we really have to hang on to that somehow. And I think our Christian education just has to be about helping people grow into that. And I grant that it's hard for some people. I mean, I'm not really a musician, despite my name, of course, but I'm not really a real talented musician. But I think, you know, if we have a commitment to Christ, that it ought to mean something, and that we ought to be able to work hard at learning some of these hymns and learning to do the liturgy well. And that's really what I want for people. And I really think it's a great loss. I mean, last year when I went on vacation, I went to Minnesota and Wisconsin, and I mean, I couldn't even tell that I was in a Lutheran church in some of the places I went. They didn't use the LBW, they didn't sing any hymns that I knew. And I mean, I think to keep that one hymnal that we're all using and worship style really is an expression of our oneness, our community with those Lutherans all over the country. So I just am not ready to, you know, make all of those changes. And furthermore, I mean, musically and theologically, I really have questions about some of the contemporary music. I mean, it seems very eye-centered and very much based on emotions, and that's just not where our Lutheran theology is.
Well, thank you so much. We've introduced now the whole notion of really what the point of worship is, that raises a whole other set of issues, and I can see that, Chris, you've got quite a job here, but it sounds like you may have the solution between the rock-solid foundation of the tradition, which is right here, this is the rock-solid foundation, and on the other hand, the longing for a more contemporary idiom. So why don't you unpack a little bit for us here your idea?
Yeah, well, I feel as though I don't want to say that I have a solution. I think when you say you have a solution, you end up stepping on some toes. That's not what I'm here to do. I'm a member of the worship committee. I represent about 12 to 15 members of our church. And in so doing, these are people who are going into the different services that we have right now, at the 8:45 and the 10:30, and they listen. You know, after the service, they are intentional about going to people. How do you feel about that service? Can you give us some feedback? And so we come to a bi-monthly meeting, and we talk about that, and these are exactly some of the kind of concerns that we hear. And we also hear concerns that the pastor is referring to as well. You know, it's a challenge for age issues, and I guess at this point I want to say that I'm a little bit kicking myself. This is so typical of myself, Chris Deal, for getting to write some things down, jotting some notes down. I like to, you know, I don't feel like I've got an agenda. I don't want to feel as though I have a set plan going into anything. So it disappoints some people. So I'm a little all over the place. But I do want to say that what I think the church can do, and what our church can specifically do, is be available to both schools of thought and more. I think of the younger crowd. I can't help myself but think of the younger crowd. This is the feedback we're getting. The younger crowd wants a more contemporary service. There's also a middle-aged crowd and a college-age crowd that's looking for more of a contemporary service. The older crowd seems, and I don't want to step on toes and divide it into ages, but I'll tell you, this is the feedback we're getting. I can only vouch for that. But it seems like an older crowd is more interested in the depth of the liturgy and the depth of the Christian tradition as we've known it for, as you say, 20 centuries. And, I also have to, I drive to the Jewel Osco. That's in Illinois. Jewel Osco is a, sorry, Chris Teal takes some trips sometimes. We go to the grocery store and you see the people there, and they're not all people like us. We have an enormous Hispanic community that's looking for entrance into a worshipful life. How can we be available to that? It's not about being a church of setting an 8:30, 8:45 service for one group and a 10:45 for another, but if we want to do that, we can. You know, we need to talk about that, but at that point, you're separating, and I don't know how healthy that is. It's not about divisiveness, it's about hospitality, and it's about inviting people in. And if that means stretching some of these liturgical values that we've cherished throughout the years, then so be it, I say. I think about the 20th centuries, or all this time that we've had in this liturgy, and I see a lot of oppressive images that come out, a lot of oppressive language. I see a lot of people being excluded and removed from what it means. And that's what I'm hearing, that's the feedback I have, and I'm available for conversation at any time. I think that's what the worship committee is there to do.
Well, thank you so much. I don't really see, Mr. Baton, how you can disagree with this willingness and openness and receptiveness and thoughtfulness to provide hospitality, two separate services, different styles for different people. Seems to share some of the concerns of both of the people who've spoken so far. But you seem not quite satisfied with his ideas. What's the problem here?
Let me tell you, this church has a lot more problems than I thought when I took this job 7 months ago. I knew they had a good organ and a good choir, but I didn't realize that some of the members are listening to Christian radio. And some of them want that stuff on Sunday morning. Now, I love all kinds of music. But my training was classical, I mean, in the great music of the church. And it's clear to me that the members who really support the church and the music program want to sustain and build on that great Lutheran tradition. I'm also getting a little resistance from Pastor Singer on the issue of inclusive language, which I learned so much about in college. It seems that the more supportive members have some feelings about that, too. My problem with the idea of having different styles and different services is that it splits the congregation. Besides, so much of this pop Christian music is so simplistic. And talk about problems with inclusive language. It's all about me and Jesus. And sounds like it was all written by and for Southern Baptists. There are some people, however, who are threatening to leave the church, so I suppose we probably better include some more contemporary things. But I think it should just be integrated into the liturgy. Isn't that what Martin Luther did?
Well, there you have it. This church really needs some help, I think. And you're all here now to provide counsel, aid, suggestions, support, and questions to these folks about what they ought to be doing there at St. Sebastian. Maybe out of your own experience in your own parishes, maybe taking up some of these big questions they've raised. The point of worship? Is it entertainment? Is it to make people feel good? Is it to worship God, all three, in what order? What's the theology of these hymns? I think that the issues become just complicated again by our choral director here indicating that the inclusive language issue doesn't line up exactly with contemporary and traditional. It's not as though the more contemporary are automatically the more expansive. So that's another complicating factor. Where can they begin to keep the community intact and still worship God? Yes?
I'd like to just share what happened at our congregation. We had two services. One, the early service was a traditional service, straight out of the LDW, same setting every Sunday. And the late service was a contemporary service, which was created on the fly every week and varied quite a bit from one week to the other. Some weeks there was almost no liturgy whatsoever, it was almost non-liturgical. And there was more of a split in the congregation. And what we wound up doing was kind of bringing them closer together. We introduced some newer music into the early service on occasion, and we stuck with traditional LBW, but sometimes would use variations on the settings. We'd always have the same week to week. And in the later service, we tended to go more towards things like Now the Feast that were a little more liturgical and more consistent and had less variation. And that seemed to help because there was more crossover then from one service to the next between people.
Great. So that's your story. You suggest you had maybe Chris Deal as an original consultant and did what he proposed, but then sort of gradually, almost imperceptibly, each service began to cross-fertilize the other a bit, and now they're, if not identical, then at least each has some elements of the other.
Yeah.
Yes?
I'm from St. Andrew in Beaverton, and I'd like to relate kind of how what we've done. We also have a kind of a two-service setup where the first early 30 service is the contemporary service and the 11 o'clock service is the LBW service. The contemporary service has, for the time that the 10 years I've been there, has been Now the Feast, supplemented by the Gather hymnal. The 11 o'clock service has been primarily LBW with a little bit of forays, and I think this is where this cross-pollination thing comes in. Especially in the contemporary services in which, like, the Gather does not have hymns that are, well, I'd say that are appropriate for the church calendar. We will do some substitution. For instance, like in Advent, there's really not too many Advent hymns in LBW, so we tend to borrow a little bit, or not in LBW, but in Gather, so we tend to borrow some of the more traditional hymns from LBW for that service. The choir music tends to be also varied at both services, so it is not unusual for us to be singing 17th century church music at the contemporary service and a little bit more contemporary music at the later service. And that seems to have been a reasonable compromise, although I would say that there's always going to be the die-hard contemporary service people and the die-hard traditional service people. One thing it kind of seems to me is that as Lutherans, we have a heritage of a liturgical approach, and it seems to me that you don't want to abandon that because you do want to retain some sense of identity as Lutherans. And that's one thing that we've really debated quite a bit is, you know, what is the importance of identity? If you try to be all things to all people, then pretty soon you find that you're kind of disregarding your heritage, and we didn't really want to do that.
So. Could I ask a question of these two people?
Sure.
Well, one of the issues that I see working in a university with young people who are interested in church music leadership is that we are asking people to do something that very few even professional musicians have to do, and that is to be conversant with traditions of Baroque performance practice right up through how to read a chord sheet. How is the musical leadership handled in your churches? Do you have different leadership for the contemporary music than the classical and traditional?
We do have a music group that's at the contemporary service that will lead the songs, basically. And our choir actually switches back and forth between the two services every Sunday. So depending on whether the choir is there or not, it changes the service somewhat.
But your choir director is comfortable preparing things in a variety of ways.
The choir director is comfortable with both. We have the organ at the traditional service and piano at the contemporary service. So that kind of sets the tone for everything else.
And does that person play the piano? I'm sorry, this is all practical stuff, but it really does impact. The same person plays both?
Yes, same person plays both.
Let me hear a couple of people. Both of the examples we had here, though yours was dynamic and changed over time, wound up with this arrangement of different LBW in one service and more contemporary in another. I'd like to hear a few people respond in a way to Pastor Singer's concern, and in a way what you just said at the end of your comment. That is to say, obviously one of the dangers of separating this always is that there's then no place to form young people at all into, if they always go to the contemporary service, into the more traditional worship form, so that over time, that whole tradition might simply disappear if all of the young people, or most of them, continually go to the contemporary service. Where do they even get an ear for or an ability to sing those other songs? And so insofar as you agree with this gentleman that at least a part of the vocation of a Lutheran parish for Lutherans, a Catholic parish for Catholics, a Methodist parish for Methodists would be to keep their distinctive traditions alive, where can that go on if you begin to divide things up? And should this be a concern? Or shouldn't it be a concern?
Well, one of the things that they're trying that's new is they take sometimes more of your modern hymns and weave it in with the old. I can think of one of which is in Gather's Night of Silence, interwoven with Silent Night. And there is another, I think it is a Catholic hymn. I was trying to think of what it was before. But there's one with Come Holy Ghost and Creating to Rest, but there's a brand new counter medley that they have interwoven with using that old traditional hymn as the refrain. And in a way, it's good because it gets people who are comfortable with the old traditional hymns kind of shifting towards a little bit towards newer contemporary stuff, and that way you give them a chance to bring in.
Okay, that's a little bit along the lines, I think, of what Mr. Baton was suggesting. You had an idea.
Well, there sort of seems to be an assumption that there's only one kind of contemporary music. And there's really quite a bit of difference from, say, swing music to rap to rock and roll to soft rock and roll. And you may find that 25 years from now, the traditional service will be what's, you know, contemporary today, and the new service then will be something that you can't even imagine at this point.
Okay, so it's helpful to be reminded that we shouldn't be using the term contemporary, though it's one monolithic thing. There's all kinds of variations. What about the issue, though, that the pastor's raised about keeping, and this gentleman has raised, do you think it's the vocation of our parishes, in part, to keep the tradition alive, in part, not that that's its only vocation, but how do you respond to to Pastor Singer's concern here? Yes.
I think the assumption that we're all making is that young people, especially my age, would only go to the contemporary services, and I think that's way off. I would personally, like the service we had tonight at Vespers, personally for me, that speaks more to me than going and singing, you know, Praise Jesus or whatever, you know. So I think we need to keep in mind that I think the traditions are going to be carried by, while there is kind of a new birth of a new kind of service that speaks to other people.
I have a question. Where in the at what time in the child's upbringing in the church do they learn what the liturgy and all of that? When are they educated to what is going on in the service?
You're asking me.
I guess Pastor Singer.
Yes. Well, I think it's practically from the cradle. And
I can, but when do you cover what all this wonderful language is speaking to? What all this wonderful?
Well, I spend a whole year in confirmation instruction on just liturgy and hymnody. So it's, you know, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders.
Oh, okay. I mean, I thought we're pretty much down to confirmation in 6 weeks, and you're out there.
See, this is exactly the thing that I'm concerned about.
I'm just speaking from the point of view. I mean, 7, 2 years.
Pretty soon people won't even know Luther's Small Catechism anymore. And then where will we be as Lutherans?
What does that mean, basically?
This is not certainly true.
Certainly true. Yes, up here.
Well, we've mainly focused on music, or we're mixing up categories of traditional and contemporary in terms of music with the idea of liturgical, I think that there's a difference. The gentleman here, I don't know your name, from
Beaver.
Okay. What you said at the end of your comment about we do view Lutheran uniqueness as being a liturgical tradition, I think is an important insight for me, but I guess I would not agree that that needs necessarily to go along with 16th century music. And I think an example of a contemporary liturgy that's fully liturgical in a very Lutheran sense would be now the Feast and Celebration. And I do have more problems with contemporary services that aren't as much in the tradition of the great liturgy, sort of. But what that service also does is another issue that's been raised somewhat here that is very important to me, which is inclusive language. And I thought the service tonight, for example, was very beautiful. I don't need that many references to Father, and that's where the struggle is for me with the worship book, the Lutheran Book of Worship, being now more than 20 years old. I mean, I think that's a dilemma for some who want to be liturgical but also inclusive. It's always a dilemma with the Lutheran Book of Worship. And but I guess I just want to make the distinction between traditional and liturgical, because I do value liturgical, and I think that doesn't necessarily go with old music.
Good. Just notice that this is the second time that a lot of the distinctions built into the narrative and the dramatization have been called into question, that we need richer senses of what we mean by contemporary, and that we shouldn't so easily just equate liturgical and traditional. One can have a very traditional liturgy presented in a form and according to a musical score that is in many ways resonates to very much contemporary ears. So there are ways of locating these on a very subtle spectrum rather than carving them up into sharp distinctions. Yes, back there.
This is a question for pastors.
Singer?
Mm-hmm. If one of your concerns is to try to maintain sort of the Lutheranness of the service and the Lutheranness of the congregation, then what do we as parishioners make of the concordats that have been working out with the Episcopalians and the Presbyterians, I believe, at the top levels of our Lutheran Church. So is it necessary to remain distinctly Lutheran when our bishops are signing these documents saying, well, you know, we're all one?
Well, I think you have to understand that those are not mergers, but are simply agreements to cooperate and to share certain things. But I have some questions, frankly, about this, of sharing clergy back and forth across those denominational lines. But I think you have to understand we're not talking merger here. It's not a matter of all of those things being melded into one organization, but that those distinctive characteristics can still be maintained in some way, I think. But I have some questions, and I've written to Chicago about that myself.
Yes, sir.
Why is the Lutheran Church diminishing by 2% a year in the United States and increasing in Africa? Does it have something to do with the service?
Boy, that's a tough question. I'm glad I'm not.
I think the African scholar. The African scholar has to do it.
Yes, do you know? Chuck?
I think part of it is liturgy. A part of it is making the whole service relevant to the congregants. But I think there's myriad of other factors that are going on, some social and economic, but also very much of a sense of, well, what do I have? What is there beyond the church that I can rely on? So it's very complex. I wish I knew more.
It sounds like that was a little bit of a rhetorical question. I mean, do you sort of have this a hypothesis yourself as to the 2% decline and the extent to which it's connected with the worship form?
Well, I personally think it is, but that's just my opinion. Why are the free churches growing so rapidly?
Because you don't have to think.
I don't.
Can I expand on that for just a second? Part of my initial reaction is you can dumb the service down to the lowest common denominator. And yes, you will get everybody in. So, and then you get everybody in and then I will leave. I don't want things dumbed down to the commas. We're doing it in the schools. That's my initial, I don't have a solution, I'm not talking solutions here.
Mm-hmm.
But part of me says some of these, yes, I can go into any church down the road and I can sing the simple songs. It doesn't require anything of me, it gives me all the answers, and I can go home feeling good. But that's what my tendency, and I think that seems to be a whole trend. You do it in the schools and the TV and any place. They're dumbing everything down to the common denominator, and nothing is being enriched or growing.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
We've been members of a large Lutheran church that had a lot of contemporary elements to it, and they maintain a pretty much traditional service early in the morning. And what I found for myself was that I preferred the contemporary services, but I went to whichever one fit in my schedule best. And I still enjoy going and singing those hymns that I learned as a child, but I also like to go where my kids wanted to go and really participate. I mean, they were dragging this back row Lutheran to the front row so that they could sit and watch and listen to what was going on. And you can't knock that, I don't think. And they'll go to the traditional services. I mean, they're learning about those things too. But they felt wanted, or they felt included, I think, in those contemporary services, or I don't know. And if you don't have those, I think those kids may go somewhere else.
Good.
And maybe that's why the church is declining, because people are dying, rather than being born into the church. I don't know.
Thank you.
But we've sabotaged ourselves in that. I mean, I did have 2 years of confirmation. I came out of there knowing a lot more than my children did in the 8 weeks that they had. We, as a parent, we educated them. Mm-hmm. Or I came away educated. I introduced them to what was going on in that traditional service. Mm-hmm. I required them to examine what it is that we are doing here.
I wasn't born a Lutheran. I'm attending a Lutheran church now. My background was more Methodist, Western Methodist. And I attended my first Lutheran service in North Carolina, in a small little town there. And my wife is Lutheran, and we attended that church for about 18 months until I couldn't go anymore. And we switched over to the more liberal Presbyterian congregation there in town. And that is below the south of Mason-Dixon, by the way, that reference. I found that not having perhaps that background that you're talking about as an adult, I found the congregation or the service to be rote and heavy and unyielding. And I understood there was great tradition there, great tradition. And I love songs like Holy, 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 and Onward Christian Soldiers. In fact, I've spoken to our pastor. Why don't we sing that song every once in a while? He says that he'll do it. But, so I was wrestling with these two things just inside myself. And the church that I attend now is Lutheran Church in Oregon, and the pastor does two different service styles, but it's the thrust of the service style is more contemporary. But there's a great mix there, and I think that I had a great fear about, you know, having guitars and bongos and things like that in the church, and that they do have something to offer. Maybe it's not for me, but there is something there, and I think it's the mix. It's the pastor, it's the congregation. I don't think that you're throwing things away or you're discarding what has been there for over 1,000 years. I mean, look where Lutheranism came from. It came from a rebel, mm-hmm. you know, a person that was fed up with the way things were done, that it was just too rote. And so that's part of our history. And I think we have to take that into account.
Thank you. You remind us of two things. One is that the confirmation class, there are people needing formation other than just the young people who reach age 13 or whenever they go to confirmation class, but new members joining all the time whose background hasn't been Lutheran. You remind us of an even more profound point, which was isn't the Reformation, and Luther's using the vernacular and writing what he did, might not the contemporary equivalent of that be Marty Halban or something? So that's a very fine point. Thank you for those observations. Yes.
Oh, I came from a I'm sorry. I'm over here.
You're going to have your chair here.
From a conservative Baptist background and came to the Lutheran tradition because of the music and because of grace. And our service that we have in our smaller church that we have in Nisswa, Minnesota, is a blend of the traditions. And we never know from one Sunday to the next what's going to happen, but everyone does it. We have three services, and one service can be just totally the service of word, and with not much music at all, it's for fishermen. Women, it's a 25-minute service. They're in and out, and they get the message, and we get the offering, and that's it. But then the other services are, you come in, we have a very fine organist, we have a very fine choir, and we do the whole gamut of music. And people, we do not have in our church, it's a very fast growing church, and we have people from all different backgrounds come. But they appreciate the diversity. But we have, within our music committee that we have, we like to stay kind of in the middle. We're kind of traditionalists, all of us. And we like good music. So we're always giving the best of whatever we can, no matter what style it happens to be. And so we seem to be hitting the right kind of mix that people enjoy coming and worshiping and having a good experience.
Thank you. Yes.
I happen to chair the youth committee in our church, and in answer to the question about why we're declining by 2%, I had the wonderful experience of having attended the Anaheim Western States Youth Gathering for the ELCA youth. And one of the things that I noted there was we have a very active youth program in our church and a growing church, but it struck me that for the first time, some of those 30 kids that we took to Anaheim worshiped in a way that was meaningful to them. Because it was very contemporary, it was liturgical, but the music grabbed them. And they were dancing in the aisles, unlike most of our Lutheran services. And while I do think there's maybe, you know, 5 or 10% that really are good musicians and want to explore Bach and all of that stuff, the majority of our kids are pulled in to their faith by music that touches them in some meaningful way. And while I think we do a pretty good job in our church of doing the mixed stuff at our two services, I don't think that we really offer even probably one service a year that grabs them in the same way that some of the youth things that we've done at the Synod level or at the Western States Gathering grab those kids. But I hate to think that they have one worship experience in 3 years that's truly meaningful. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I think part of the thing that makes that experience so meaningful for us is the fact that we're with so many youth. And I think it would be extremely hard to make that a regular church because we're surrounded by adults and we're not getting the same kind of feeling. So you can try putting in this contemporary song, but you're not going to get us dancing in the aisles.
I agree. It's pretty intimidating to dance when everybody else is standing looking at you.
That's right. And I think what we find so meaningful in those situations are the fact that, yes, there are so many of us. And sometimes we get scared that we think, you know, that youth are leaving, but those experiences make it important because there are so many of us, and that's why when we go back, it's kind of disappointing because you're surrounded by adults who are looking deeper than we are in that kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Jane?
Does it help to have at least a kind of connection or bridge between the youth experiences where everybody's your same age and the regular worship service on Sunday mornings? You have a little bit of that contemporary music in the Sunday morning service. I mean, is that helpful to you? Sort of say, all right, I still belong to this church even though I can't fully express my religious feelings and this music in all the ways.
It depends on which music you use. I think parents just aren't, I mean, the experience that we have is that, yeah, we're all together, we're having fun. It wouldn't matter if it's good music, good contemporary music, or bad contemporary music. But if we're in a service with other ages, you realize more how bad music is, and that doesn't make it fun. Yeah. And so, yeah, sometimes that will help, but you have to use discretion.
Like the curl, it can be a curl, you know. Contemporary music, if it's done really, really well, can be really good, and most often, not most, often though, it can, if you have people who don't have a background in it, if you have a church that doesn't have the sound equipment, there's just so many things to go wrong. It's hard to do well, and the music hasn't sifted out. You know, we haven't even found the Paco Bells yet, let alone the Bucks de Witters in the box.
Tom,
it sounds like it at your church and at many of the other churches, the flashpoint on issues between contemporary and traditional is the music, maybe the liturgy, music liturgy, but not the preaching of the word. And that's a little surprising given what we know about attention spans. Why is it the case that that's where the issue is, or is the other part of worship where the contemporary traditional really makes a difference, is that we're holding on to traditional ways of presenting the word in an age in which we're not psychologically equipped to receive the word in that way?
Yes, sir.
Just an observation. It seems like if you look at how media is presented today, and relating to what this gentleman just said, is that if you look at commercials, music, news broadcasts, you will see that most of the information is presented within like 30 seconds max. You'll find that views will change every 5 seconds. It doesn't really surprise me, therefore, that the more contemplative, the longer time spans required for the earlier liturgies would really test a lot of people.
Where do you put the 20-minute sermon on that?
I'm going to ask, we're getting close to the end, and so it's time for sort of last words, and I want to give the first opportunity to Jennifer here, who laid out at the very beginning the quandary and feeling torn and so forth, and ask whether you want to lift up anything that's been said that has been particularly helpful, or suggest that you've heard these ideas before and you still haven't been helped. What's been helpful to you that you've heard tonight?
Well, I'm just hoping that our music director and our pastor and our choir director would, you want me to enroll right now, right? Yeah, okay. Would be more open to the mix, at least. You
to know, the mix.
A step. Or even separate services. I just want to see more intentional growth in that area. I really do. I'm hoping with the comments you've heard these, recognize that it's a direction we ought to really explore.
I think that another one thing I've heard is that it's going to be vital in many of these parishes to have some kind of framework in place where folks can talk to each other about these matters and have some impact on worship in the way that we've been talking to one another here tonight. In other words, what I've been hearing is less that there was one key point that we can all take with us and say, aha, that solves things. That didn't happen, but at least some of the exchanges back and forth, when we began to not treat the young as a kind of monolithic group that has one view, we were invited and cautioned against talking about contemporary as though that's one monolithic thing. We were invited to complexify this in many ways, as in, for example, the notion that maintaining a very traditional liturgical form, but nonetheless giving it the kind of energy that comes from musical phrasing that has a much more contemporary ring, may be an option that doesn't force us to choose A or B, but lets us blend and so forth. And then the narratives we've had from different parishes of starting out with clear divisions, but finding those coming closer and closer together, something I'll take away. And also the whole issue of the importance of some kind of formation and how that takes place. Hopefully one can be resourceful and multiply responsive rather than have to pick up and choose sides. But it seems to me what's crucial in parishes is often to try to take back not a single idea, but some of the process that at its best Holden gets going in terms of these conversations. Because people certainly here listen to one another very attentively and were able to give each other new ideas and so forth. If we could duplicate that in the parishes in the form of a worship committee such as the one that Chris Deal has led so nobly, we will do, I think, ourselves and our parishes and the church a great favor. I want to thank, before we adjourn, and identify now the folks who played these roles. First of all, Jennifer was played by somebody named Jennifer, except her last name is Grosvenor, and she spoke out in the Bible study the other day with her story, and I invited her to play this role. So if you open your mouth in Bible study, you may find yourself at a forum. Chris Deal is Chris Merkner, who is on long-term volunteer staff and works in our kitchen. Louise Williams played Pastor Louise Singer, and she's on teaching staff this week and next. And of course, you've met Dennis Friesen-Carper, who's our village musician, who played Dennis Baton tonight. Again, these views were not necessarily the views that they personally hold, and I'll bet you're astute enough to guess whose views were their own and whose views weren't. But mainly thanks to all of you for coming out and contributing. Don't forget the opportunity for the meteor walk out by Narnia. And thanks again for tonight's forum. Good night.
So what happened to that church?
Well, I think the people there, Jane and Mel, who were not there.